Welcome to the Pacifica National Board Personnel Committee teleconference. Today is Monday, April 7th. Eastern Time, it would be 8:39 p.m. Eastern Time. And I am Jack Van Aken. I'm the Chair Pro Tem of the Personnel Committee. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for paying attention. Thanks for caring. I've sent out a proposed agenda. I know I left something off of it, but first of all, I'd like to call this meeting to order. And since I'm also the secretary, I get to call roll. So I have a pretty good sense of who's here, but I'm going to go ahead anyway. Thea Nwangaza.
Here.
Nia Bediako.
Present.
A.C. Bird.
Here.
Sarv Randhawa is absent. Evelyn Doc Bethune told me she would not be here today. And Jack Van Aken is present. And I note that also present is our Human Resources Director, Dominga Estrada. Dominga, you're
Hi.
Here, right?
Yes.
Hi. Okay. Roll has been called. I also sent out an agenda with the email that says personnel call-in codes and agenda, and I realized that I've left something off of the agenda, is that we have been meaning to bring a motion. I believe Nia Bediako has been meaning to bring a motion to this committee regarding the general manager search process, which is laid out in the bylaws, very minimally recommends a pool, and I think we have a motion that might define that pool a little more clearly than what we already have. So I would like to add that to the agenda as the new number 6, right after setting next meeting. I'll put down Bediako motion on GM pool. There's no objection. And then going on down the agenda, the underlying structural issues of the CFOED Pacifica National Board relationship would become number 7. And I have subheadings, which are the general topics there, which relate there to the 3 options from the February 1 Estrada report, which I've just sent out with boldface on the 3 options of the relationship we're talking about, and then how that relates to the relevant bylaws articles, which I think I've sent out the relevant articles of the bylaws that relate to the ED and CFO job descriptions and their somewhat confusing reporting structure, and also how to proceed with the ED and CFO job descriptions I have as number C. And what I would like to say, I know some of us feel that this is a good time to move forward and go point by point through the various job description proposals that we have and come to an agreement that we can bring to the National Board in Houston. After consultation and much thinking, I've decided that I think that's a bad idea because I think that this is a very sensitive matter, and that first we need to bring the underlying structure to the PNB as a committee and see if the PNB can come to an agreement about that, and then I think we would be ready and have enough material to go ahead and delineate the job descriptions based on the authorization from the National Board about what the basic structure, basic reporting structure ought to be. And, you know, I'm not going to impose that view on the committee, and some members probably feel strongly that we should go ahead, but I really am urging the committee to hold off and let's try to make a proposal to the PNB that is more general and provides us with a basic skeleton, an outline that we can use as a basis for going ahead with the job description so that we know that we're on firmer footing than if we just take for granted that we're sure how the board will to the root issues and go ahead and flesh them out and come back with a, you know, fully painted picture that could lead to a very convoluted and time-consuming discussion. That's my view on it, and I would like to open this up for discussion as part of approval of the agenda. So does anyone have any comment about what I've just said or need any clarification about what I've just said?
Chair, this is Nia.
Yeah, Nia.
I'd like to approve the agenda that as we get to that item, then we can motivate it.
Okay. Sounds like a good...
So I make a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Okay. Is there any discussion of that?
This is Dominga. I was wondering if we could maybe hold off on the GM discussion. There was a confidential development that I'd like to tell the committee about, that I'd rather tell them about offline.
Oh, okay.
Before we discuss going ahead with maybe defining a pool.
Oh, okay. I'll certainly take that under advisement. Is there any objection to Dominga's recommendation from the committee? Okay, hearing none, I think maybe we'll take number six off of the agenda, and what will we do? Will we have a closed session after the meeting? Would that be
if you'd like, or we could discuss it in Houston? Either way.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll see how the meeting's going, and then let's just strike it, and then when we are ready to adjourn, because it's just so unpredictable how long these meetings will last, and I'm not sure I want to set something on here that we may not get to, and we will
okay.
All be together in just a few days. Okay, if there's no objection, we'll take that item off, and we'll go back to the original proposed
Chair?
Agenda. Yes?
Chair?
Yes?
This is Nia. I'm not objecting,
yes.
But it doesn't look like what we have here will take more than 3 hours, so I would suggest that we go into executive session after.
After 3 hours?
No.
I mean, we will be under...
After we're done with this agenda, right.
What you're saying is we will be under the three-hour limit.
Right, right. So after that, because we started at 8, you said 8, it was 8:19, I think. So I'm sure we'll have enough time.
8:39.
8:39? I don't think we'll be here till 11:39. So,
I certainly hope not. Okay.
So after we're done, we can go into executive session?
Well, since I always do whatever the last person said to do, I'll put executive session.
Okay, so no one could go after me. Just joking.
Well,
may I ask the question? It sounded like Dominguez was saying that we should have a discussion before we get into some of this. And
No. I just meant that
I didn't want
to talk to it until we were in executive session. So, if this went late, then I wouldn't be adverse to talking about it in Houston or however you guys want to do it.
It was just about the GM process.
Right.
There's been a development as of today.
Okay.
I guess a confidential matter, or at least aspects of it are. And let's see. So we have a new agenda which includes executive session as number 7, and we'll see if we get to number 7. So, if there are no objections, you can go ahead and approve the agenda. Hearing none, the agenda is approved. And now I just sent out some minutes. It should be in your email box for March 17th, which I had sent out much sooner. And I think I sent it out maybe a week and a half ago. Would people like to review the minutes of the last meeting, the March 17 meeting? Or...
I read it already.
Yeah. Nia's on top of things, as usual. I don't think we had any action items. Okay, well, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
A Any discussion? Any amendments? Any objections to approving the minutes? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved, and we can proceed. So, setting next meeting. This is the item I tend to forget. I guess we're doing all right on this Monday. And I think we need to get KPFTX up on my web browser, which is not open. And how do people feel about meeting on Monday? Since we're all here.
In general, or a date, or?
Yeah. Let me get a date up here. Since this is April, let's see, go to May. Should we go all the way to May? First Monday would be May 5th, which is my wife's birthday. That would be a problem.
So may I make a suggestion?
It's also Cinco de Mayo, and sometimes we get heat for scheduling meetings on Cinco de Mayo in Los Angeles. How about April 28th, which is a Monday, which is the day before the audit committee meets? Nia, we'll both be on the audit committee. So April 28th is a Monday, or Tuesday, May 6th, or maybe Thursday, May 8th. I wonder, yeah, some of the LSBs will be meeting early in that month.
This is Nia?
Yeah, Nia?
I would like to move April 28th, because depending on what comes out of this this weekend,
yeah.
IPNB,
yeah.
We might need to meet.
I think no matter what comes out of it, we're going to need to meet. Okay.
Sooner than later.
Yeah. Well, is there anyone on the call that could not make Monday, May 28th? April 28th. April. Got it. Okay. Well, we'll set the meeting for Monday, April 28th then. And it's good to get this housekeeping stuff out of the way. It's not my strong suit. Okay.
At 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock Eastern time, that works?
Sure.
Okay, good. And, okay, April 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern. So we can move the agenda to the underlying structural issues of the CFO, ED, and PMB relationship. And the three options, as Dominga has laid them out, in her perspective, which I think is a good way of looking at it. Number one, the CFO answers to both the national board and the executive director, creating a clear link between finance and administration. And I think we're all familiar with what the bylaws say and how, in my view, they're not perfectly crystal clear. We wouldn't be having this discussion. But that the CFO does report to the national board. And I think that was deliberate, and historically that was intended for a reason. And whether or not the CFO reports dually to the national board and the executive director is one of the areas of contention, because it's not entirely clear what the bylaws intend. One thing that I think is become clear to me that I hadn't noticed before is that the one specific article of the bylaws seems to give the National Board specific authority to delegate its authority over the CFO to the ED, because it says, I can get my... I sent an email out, relevant bylaws articles. It's in Article 9, Officers of the Foundation, Section 7, Executive Director. Item B, the bylaws state, subject to the control of the board, the executive director shall have general supervision, direction, and control of the business and the officers of the foundation. Officers of the Foundation is peculiar in this instance because the officers are defined very clearly. They include the PNB chair, the vice chair, and the secretary. And it seems to me that giving the executive director supervision of those positions in the organization would be certainly a surprise if we tried to implement that. My idea is that as much of these bylaws seem to be copy-pasted boilerplate stuff that wasn't put together terribly with a great deal of care, that officers of the foundation probably doesn't mean that the executive director has general supervision, direction, and control of the business of the PNB chair. I doubt that. So I wonder what officers of the foundation really means in this context, if it doesn't mean something else. And fortunately, we at least have one attorney on the call, and we have an HR person. But that's something that I think we need to look at, that there's a certain amount of discretion given to the board about what general areas the executive director will supervise. So the PMB has some leeway here, at least to my mind. I'm going on into a big speech. If anyone has something to say, please jump in. Number two, all Pacifica staff, including the national finance staff, with the exception of the CFO, would answer to the executive director, also creating a link, but keeping intact the CFO-PNB reporting relationship. And I think what this would indicate is that the CFO would not be reporting to the executive director, so they would have to be working collaboratively. I don't see any way around it. However, the CFO, would be reporting to the national board as is clear, but would not report to the executive director. And the finance staff, however, is the item here that's in play. The finance staff would actually be answering to the executive director. So this is a very sharp contrast to number three when we get to it. The question here, I think, historically, is that it would be a shift from the oversight responsibility of the board. The board would be delegating some of it to the executive director. And I think that the bylaws are clear that the board can do that, but the board has to decide to do that. And the problem that we're facing is that we don't really know where the board is at and what the board wants to do, and which is one of the reasons why I'm a little hesitant to go full steam ahead towards the job description. Finally, number three, it is made explicit in the job descriptions that the national finance staff and the chief financial officer are out of the realm of responsibility of the executive director, splitting the financial and administrative departments of the organization and having both report directly to the board. And this would... In some ways, this would require the board to fully exercise its oversight function of the finance department via the CFO, in addition to the oversight function of the remainder of the organization. These are the three pathways that I think are the three general areas that we need to explore and have been looking at, I think, all of us on this teleconference. I wonder if anyone has some ideas. What I would like to do is have some discussion and then put them up to a voice vote that could be tallied with an IRV method, and chair would not vote, so that if there's a tie, IRV could be used to break the tie, but it wouldn't be a secret ballot. It would be an open vote so that we have that accountability, since it's not really an election, but just a method of choosing. I don't know if there's a distinction, but I'm going to say there is.
Jack, it's Dominga. Can I say something really
sure.
quickly about these choices?
Yes.
Number two, when I said that the national staff would be included, I meant included in all Pacifica staff, so I'm not recommending that the ED oversee them directly, like taking away Lonnie's direct reports. more that they're included in the definition of all Pacifica staff, which the ED is responsible for. I don't know if I've made that clear enough before, but sometimes in these discussions it kind of sounds like people think we're trying to take away Lonnie's direct reporting responsibilities, I guess.
So,
does that make sense?
Yeah, and I've been wondering, is it analogous in some way, in this particular aspect, is it analogous to having a program director at the head of a programming department?
Exactly.
And yet having a GM that, you know, is responsible for the programming department in spite of that, but sort of, you know, delegates the supervisory role to the PD.
Right, and thanks for correcting me, actually. Naming the position is probably better, even though there are people attached to these positions already. Yes, exactly. The GM reports into the ED, but the program director reports into the GM. So essentially, the ED is responsible for both the program director and the GM.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe we need
so
to...
So what would be the language that would be substituted in...
to make that really crystal clear?
To make that clear?
Yes.
We could discuss that. We've been discussing, you know, what to do so far. I think once we've made a choice, we can discuss what that language would be.
If we're going to make, as I understand Jack, he's proposing that these three choices be submitted to the board, and I think that the language of the three choices has to be accurate and reflect what the thinking of the committee is.
Okay. The three choices should have already been submitted to the board. They were outlined in a report that I gave that was supposed to be sent to the board February 1st.
Okay. But what I understand you're saying at this point is that it's not as precise as you think it ought to be, and based on what you all are saying now, I would agree with that. So it seems to me that at the time of the meeting, we should give them the appropriate language that we're asking them to consider.
Yeah, I agree, Dominga. I think it's really important to get our wording down before we agree to anything. My experience,
sure.
It's solved a lot of problems.
If you guys have any suggestions as to how that can be made more clear.
Is this Nia?
Yeah, Nia, go ahead.
So let me just understand. So tonight, the committee is not going to choose one of the three options. We're going to send these three that were chosen by whoever came up with these to the board?
Well, I was proposing that we would make a recommendation out of these three.
Okay, I just want to be clear, because the committee is supposed to work and give to the board somewhat of a final product that the board makes its decision on.
No, I think the committee would, and really we're not doing much of anything if we don't make a decision from amongst these three and make it as our recommendation.
So do we want to take a vote on each of them and then decide which one we're going to choose and then move along with the language, like Afia said?
Take a vote. Well, I thought we could take a vote on all three and choose one out of the three based on the vote. Is that what you meant, or do you want to vote yes, no on each one?
You could do yes, no. I mean, how many of us are here?
Four. Okay. Yeah. Well, we could go that way, and then if we have a tie, we could have. Yeah, I was thinking of using an IRV tally so that if there's a tie, you eliminate the lowest vote getter and then you transfer the second choices so that people would have a first preference and a second preference. And then if there's a tie, the lowest vote getting option would be eliminated and the second preference would transfer to the whichever one is indicated and break the tie, hopefully.
And we would do that tonight?
AC,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say before you do that, I'd like a quick summary report of the three, because it may very well be that some of those, I'm not so sure, some of the some of the ones that have been suggested, because it appears to need it when you, well, maybe I'd rather hear it than to assume it, that maybe I heard it wrong, I'm not sure. So, what were the three?
Okay. The first is the CFO answers to both the PNB and the ED, creating a clear link between finance and administration. So the CFO has a dual reporting posture to the board and to the executive director.
Okay.
Number two, all Pacifica staff, including the national finance staff, with the exception of the chief financial officer, answers to the executive director, also creating a link, but keeping intact the CFO-PNB reporting relationship, and the answering to the ED in the case of the national finance staff would not mean that the executive director supervises them on a daily basis, but that ultimately I think there would be a sort of a sign-off authority. Would that be correct, Dominga? That if, for instance, the CFO evaluates the national finance staff and then submits that to the executive director for a final signature, something like that?
I think that's something we'd have to work on if we chose that one. To me, what I was saying was that the CFO would continue supervising those people on a day-to-day basis, but that those people would be included, or those positions would be included, in the definition of Pacifica staff, all Pacifica staff.
Yeah.
Well,
I wonder, AC, is that clear? Because we were thinking of adding some language here to make it more clear than it is.
Well, maybe so. I think before we line them, I'm sorry, Mingus, I cut into you. You were saying something. Go ahead.
No, that was me. Go ahead. That was
go ahead. Go ahead, AC.
Okay, what I was going to say is that it seems to me right off the bat, there's two things that would be in inconsistent with the bylaws here at the very beginning. I'm not so sure that should be considered. For example, the CFO reporting to the PNB and the ED, the CFO is very clear in the bylaw reports to the board, period. I mean, I'm not suggesting that there isn't arrangements made where the CFO is apparent, has transparency with the ED and accountability with the ED. But that doesn't seem to me to be, I mean, we would be considering something that's inconsistent with the requirements of the bylaw itself. There's no provision for the CFO reporting dually to both. It seems to me that the accountability of the CFO is to the board. And, of course, the board has the great wisdom of having a standing committee, which is the Finance Committee, which also has a degree of oversight with the ED. I mean, with the CFO. So, and oversight as well with the ED. So I'm not so sure that, so there's two entities there. One, the ED, I mean, the CFO itself. Two, the finance committee, the standing committee of the board. I see those, the way they are structured right now in these three categories appears to me to be inconsistent with bylaw. So I'm not so sure what considering them would mean.
Well, we haven't gotten to item three yet.
And you say sign off. Item three, as I understand it, where there would be a sign-off, you say?
No, item three is it's made explicit in the job descriptions that the national finance staff and the CFO are out of the realm of responsibility of the executive director, splitting
right,
the financial and administrative departments. So that's one of the three options.
Okay.
And I don't think you intend to say that item three is...
No, item three is a different sort of category. item one and two would be, I think, a challenge to the, it would require a bylaw amendment, I think.
I don't think that they require a bylaw amendment. If you look at Section 9 of the Chief Financial Officer bylaws, it says that the Chief Financial Officer shall render to the Executive Director and the Board an account of all of his or her transactions as Chief Financial Officer and of the financial condition of the foundation whenever requested. Whenever requested, you know...
That's all right. The language then is Faye was saying means just that. That's a different sort of language statement to say that they can report to both, and that's fine. But I know in the bylaws, I don't have a copy with me, but I know precisely it says that the CFO and the CD has a responsibility for implementing policies set forth by the board.
Oh yeah, I don't think either.
They have that right.
Conceding that, yeah.
But I don't think the board has conceded any of its authority, as was pointed out at this point. And so I think that if you wanted to have language, maybe the language would be changed then.
Of the bylaws?
I mean, the language in the statement that was made about the CFO. In terms of reporting, would be required, and the ED would be required to facilitate implementation of the policy.
I think that's already laid out in the bylaws, and I don't think either one of them.
I'm saying it is, but it seems that this is when you say a dual reporting thing, that raises another question as to who then would the CFO be accountable to. The board, or both the board and the ED.
I mean, that's something for the PMB to decide, I think, ultimately. You know, all I'm saying is that I think that there is wiggle room in the bylaws for that because of Section 9, Paragraph B. But it's not my choice to make.
Not what?
Section 9, Paragraph B. What are you talking about? Article 9.
On the bylaw.
Go ahead.
Jack sent it out before the meeting. At that version.
Okay, Article 9, Section B. I don't see a Section B. I see a series of sections. I see 1, 2, 3, 4 Section B. So which one are you talking about? I mean, 4 clauses. What section are you referring to?
Section 9. Chief Financial
Article Article... Section 9.
Of Article 9. Article 9, Section 9.
Okay. All right.
So...
Article 9, Section 9,
B.
Clause B.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So you see, I don't even, if I may raise this one question, it's not a matter of what the board wants to do. The board is under the mandate of the bylaw. So the board can't willy-nilly change the bylaw without going through the process of changing it. And that was my main concern. But if you mean something like you were talking about, I'm not sure what you were talking about, Dominguez, but if you're talking about that I have no problem with the CFO being responsible to the ED in the sense of reporting what's going on with the finances throughout the system. But reporting what's going on with the finances and giving a report, just as they do to the board, is a little bit different from being accountable to and taking directions from the CFO beyond a recommendation. I don't quite follow that. How do you see that?
I think that this is a long-standing argument that's been taking place in the organization, and I honestly think that within the three choices that I laid out, that there is support enough in the bylaws for all three. I think it just depends on what the directors want to vote on and how they want us to proceed. I think that there's enough gray room in the bylaws that could be for or against any of those three. Those are just the three that I can see that would work and seem to be where we were all at an impasse.
Yeah, I would just say that, AC, that as you're well aware, I'm sure, where there's ambiguity in the bylaws or where people perceive it sometimes, others disagree, there's room for interpretation. And I think that there are going to be some, and I'm included, that believe the bylaws can be interpreted to accommodate any of the three. Doesn't make them all desirable, and that Section 7, Clause B, which says, subject to the control of the board, the executive director shall have general supervision, etc., could be interpreted, I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying it could be interpreted to give the board that a right to delegate its oversight of the CFO, and etc., to the executive director if it so chose. In other words, if the board
connect to the provision that allows that requires that the CFO is accountable to the board?
Well, I still think that the executive director would not be in a position to hire, evaluate, and terminate, which seem to be reserved exclusively to the board. I don't think that the board would have the freedom to delegate those authorities.
Right.
So I think there even for number one, I think there you could read the bylaws to say that would be legal. But it would have to be clarified that the hiring, evaluation, and termination authority would still stay with the national board. I think, it would require a bylaws change for the PNB to delegate that away. I don't know. Okay, Afia, go ahead.
The fact to give substance to the board's responsibility clause that you're referring to the specific powers in Article 5, I'm reading from your email, so I don't know whether
the Section E5 idea, have it, Section
E5. In order for the board to do that with competency, it would have to engage in consistent oversight of the CFO.
Right.
Rather than the ED supervising the CFO, because then the only thing that the board has is the ED's word about how the CFO has been performing.
Yes.
Can I just have a clarification? What choice is that a comment of?
Who are you asking, Afia?
Just anyone who would know. Is that?
I was trying to address number one, which would give the dual reporting to both the board and the executive director. I mean, how can you justify that in the bylaws?
I don't know. I think we're skipping around. We're maybe talking around each other. I thought that I was responding to Dominguez's statement that she views there being, as she put it, wiggle room in the bylaws to support putting the financial component of the board under the supervision of the ED, as opposed to it being a collaborative, co-equal component of the management of the foundation, and that when you combine, when you look at the specific powers and duties of the board and whether or not it could delegate the supervision of the financial component and meet its obligation to supervise and be able to hire and fire and the functions of DACUS iterated, would require an intimate involvement with the CFO in order to be able to realize those functions.
I think that they could, the dual reporting relationship exists within Pacifica. I think a good model of it is the GMs or PDs who, you know, can be reviewed by LSBs, but have to partner with the ED to make any sort of suggestion to that person's, you know, employment status. I think that's a good model for what I'm trying to present to the board as an option for dual reporting.
Yeah, and if I could just say, what I think AFEA is trying to emphasize is that on our LSBs, I think it's difficult for an LSB to evaluate a program director because there isn't, I mean, the only evidence of a program director's efforts to many LSB members is the programming.
Mm.
And, you know, many of us don't have the kind of day-to-day interaction, or as Afia puts it, I think correctly, the intimacy with the program director that we have with the general manager. And yet the bylaws give us the responsibility to evaluate the program director, and it makes it sort of a weak link in the chain. And I think what Afia is saying, that if the CFO is in a position of dual reporting, it weakens the board's oversight, that it weakens the intimacy that the board has with the CFO.
Am I
correct, Afia?
That's correct.
Okay, can I just speak to that really quickly?
Sure.
I think that since the ED ultimately is responsible to the board, that kind of plays into that relationship, because you're asking the person to have a dual response, or you're asking the CFO duly reports to two people, the ED and the board, but essentially, even if they had a dual reporting relationship, it would be to the board because the ED reports to the board. Right?
Well,
okay, AD, go ahead.
Yeah, see, the other thing, one reason the number one, it comes with a serious conflict of interest. You're talking about a professional relationship here. Would an ED have the knowledge base, that is to say, the professional understandings of the operations of economics and so forth, and the knowledge of a CFO, say knowledge that would be somewhat above the CFO, to have the ability to evaluate them in a way that would, you know, give them the competent authority to preside over whatever they have to say. I mean, the CFO is a highly trained professional position.
Exactly.
This is not to say that we on the board even, you know, I mean,
right. That was going to be what I was going to say. I mean, you know, that kind of calls into question if we have the expertise on the board to do the same.
Because if you had, you know, if that was the case, then you wouldn't need a CFO.
Right.
And so the dual reporting, I can clearly understand why the CFO would report to the board, and if the board had no objections, could also give the same report to the ED. And if the ED wanted information from the CFO, and they could request it. Either the board could request it. The board has a little bit more authority here because the board has already appointed a standing committee as an oversight committee, the finance committee. And so it gives it the sort of, so that if you wanted to have a language that would address those two elements, you know, the, in the reporting cycle, I can see that. But there's a distinction between reporting on all aspects of finances in terms of saying how much money we have in the bank, what is being distributed, what is coming from the various, the five stations, what is being expended for equipment, technology, how much money and resources does the ED have to deal with, and what is the status of things. I think that the CFO should be required to give that to the ED. But there's a distinction between that being the case and you requiring accountability, a supervisory ship, let's put it that way. Supervisory ship is a different thing. It seems to me that they have the, it's assumed that the finance committee will do a lot of that supervision, would engage in a lot of that supervision along with the board in the finances. But the idea, and I just want to say this for the record, the idea is when I was on the, when they were creating the CFO, new position as we have it now, was designed precisely to make the distinction between the CFO and the ED. They wanted this, there to be an intervening person who could help the board understand where its finances were going because of the history of what happened before we got one. In the sense that we ended up $5 million in debt. And so the board was a little bit leery of how, you know, money, and this is not to say that any CD would do, any ED would do this. This is just a recognition of the fact that they wanted a professional person there with the skills to analyze the finances and report it to the board. But, I mean, I can see where the ED needs information, you know, to on where the money is and how much money is being used for this, that, or the other. I think the ED should be required, can require the ED to give them that information. So they can use it, I mean, for whatever reason they need to use it. If there could be language that would address that question, it seems to me we could go with the modification, if there could be, you know, recognizing those distinguishing factors. Do you see that in any way?
I think that the language could be something that we could discuss once the board makes a recommendation on how they want its executive reporting relationship to go. As I said all along, I think the decision is the PMB's. I'm not trying to disrespect the history of Pacifica or what happened.
No, I know you're not.
When the network was taken back, but you know, at the same time, these two people, or these people. I mean, they interact with each other every day, and it would just be much better, I think, if we could just decide how we want this to go, ultimately. It would make things a lot easier on a day-to-day basis instead of waiting for a committee to hand over a report or, you know, having all of these conference calls to relay information to two people who actually work in the office together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think. So you think there ought to be a memorandum of understanding between the operational relationship of the two entities?
I would rather they not be two entities. You know, I mean, we are all one Pacifica Foundation, but
no, I mean, in terms of their responsibility.
What?
In terms of their responsibility to each other, because because, you know, both of them are responsible, I mean, are accountable to the board.
Right, both are accountable.
But they have different functions, though. They have different functions.
Jack?
Yes. Is that John?
No, it's Nia.
Oh, I'm sorry. You sounded, it's that New York accent. I thought it was John cutting in. Okay, Nia,
it's
go
okay.
ahead.
Yeah, I think that that we need to, it's now 9:09. I think we need to decide which one we're going to choose if we don't have any further, and then work on the language, whichever one we choose.
Well, yeah, I'm going to exercise a little discretion. As chair, I have a sense that there's not a lot of support on this call for number one. So maybe we could
right.
dispose of number one and put number one to a yes-no vote.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
We're using the terms reporting and answers to, and I'm concerned about about the ambiguity of the language. Apparently, there. It's done reporting and answers to what is understood to mean to be subordinate or be supervised by. Are we all accepting that definition of those terms?
Well, that's my understanding, and as I read number one, it does create a subordinate position. So there's a subordinate relationship between the CFO and the ED in number one, as I read it, even though the ultimate authority still rests with the PNB, as per the bylaws.
Okay.
Does anyone disagree with that assessment?
Well, that's even more of a reason I think number one, I agree with you, this should be eliminated. It flies in the face of everything else.
Yeah. I think when you say answers to, and I was looking up what does report mean in the sense of report to yesterday, and I think when you say answers to, it certainly creates a subordinate-superior relationship. It's not the same as rendering a report to somebody. It really does make that hierarchically clear. Are we agreed that we could go to a vote on number one and maybe dispense with it?
Yes.
Okay. Let me see here. I'm going to have to call the roll. Here we go. I've got a little notepad. All right. So we're going to vote yes, no, or abstain on number one. Thea, how would you vote on number one?
No. Strike it.
Okay. Nia, how would you vote on number one?
No.
Okay. AC, how would you vote on number one?
No.
Okay. And I won't vote. So it's three no's and zero yeses. So I think for the purpose of this committee, we've dispensed with number one, and we can just look at the two, which is a little easier to focus on. And before we go to the second, I do want to know if anyone can recommend some language that would clarify this a little bit. I'm thinking about it, and I just don't quite know what you would say. All Pacifica staff, including the national finance staff, with the exception of the CFO, answers to the ED. How do you say that without implying that the ED is supervising on a day-to-day basis?
Can't. I don't see how that's possible.
The only thing that it seems to me that, there's such a thing, and I'm sure that some of you worked in finance know this, and I know that the media's there's such a thing as statutory firing. When you say that that when you take the ability away from a position, irrespective of what the position is, to have a person who's obligated and accountable to be relieved of their authority to supervise their staff, that's essentially saying that you have a position, but you have no authority with it. So I think that we have to say that the ED would not supervise, I mean, the staff of the CFO, that it, unless you wanted to say that on all matters with the exception of finances, you know, I don't know how you would word that, but you almost, if you didn't do that, then what you're saying is that you did could walk in and say that I want X done, and you couldn't do anything about it. But if you, on the other hand, if you said that the ED sets policies or standards for whether you, how you report to work, how you conduct yourself, and all of that, then perhaps the ED can do that to all staff. That, you know, they will not have smoking, for example, in the, I'm just off the top of my head throwing out something. We will not tolerate smoking in the office, something like that. Then that goes for everybody that's there. But, or that I will not tolerate harassment in any forms of any employee. Any other relevant thing about employees that where they should be respected. It seems to me that the ED would be able to set standards for that. But that's different from specifically zeroing in on whether or not a person is conducting a survey correctly, or a, you know, I don't know if we can make a distinction there, but I can certainly see where that could be, that ED could say, you know, we're not going to tolerate people coming in a half hour late every day, or even coming in late at all without an excuse. I mean, that could go for all staff, but when you get into the question of trying to specify precisely how they must conduct their job, that's a different ballgame, because that gets into the expertise and of the person who are managing finances.
This is Nia.
Nia, go ahead.
If he after Nia.
Okay, if he, but Nia, go ahead.
Maybe I'm just not in touch with what's going on, but it you can't have an ED supervising the CFO's staff. If there's an issue, I think that these two people, as leaders of the foundation, that they should be able to talk with each other. If something is happening with one of their staff members, they should be able to discuss this and come to some mutually respectful agreement with everybody remaining whole after the decision is made. But each should supervise his or her own staff and fire his or her own staff. So I think it's a matter it's a matter of people just working together. I don't think that, personally, I don't think this should be one of the things to be considered. I think we should just state what we think it should be. And people, you know, they will rise to the level of the board's expectation. If this is what we say, how we think the foundation should be run, I think it might be a little rough in the beginning, but I think people will acclimate. But I cannot see a CFO saying, you know, that an ED staff person should be fired and just doing that. I don't think that should happen, and vice versa. If they interact and there's some sort of conflict, then both heads should be able to discuss it. And like I said, come to a mutually respectful agreement as to what's best for the foundation, which is the bottom line, and not about any particular person or persons.